Chapter 18. Identity. All the saints and all the prophets, all the secrets that you keep, exist with one intriguing question. Tell me, dearest, who are we? The Crook's Shadows. Love and Hatred. River moved on soundless feet down the length of the passenger cabins. Her brother's, meticulous and neat as always, was starting to feel empty. He spent most nights in Kaylee's bunk now. Sometimes she missed having his comforting presence so close at hand, but it was past time she learned to walk like a girl again, not a broken doll. Her own cabin felt even emptier than his. She hated staying in there too long. The walls were too close, and all the times she'd slept in there meant the walls breathed nightmares. Kaylee had tried to make it happier, by painting the wall and putting up pretty pictures, but bad dreams didn't stay trapped behind paint and paper. Carnival music still played in her head. It had been a fun day, walking under the bright sky with Kaylee and the doctor. Even the Krauts hadn't hurt too badly, their excitement loud but mostly happy. There was so much of it. After a while, it blurred into something almost as good as silence, preventing her from being invaded by too many individual thoughts. But the darkness had come back, invading and tearing at her happiness. She'd known about Three Hills then, seen the torn and broken towns filled with blood and agony. She came to a stop outside the cabin the doctor pretended to use, the one that used to belong to Shepherd Book. The door was mostly open. Trying to overcome Inara's label of scruffy, he had produced somewhat more suitable accessories, and now was grumbling over the tying of a cravat. He'd kept his usual brown pinstriped suit and scruffy, bright canvas shoes, but added a matching vest and the cravat in place of his old-fashioned necktie. He had his spectacles perched on his nose as he squinted in frustration at the small mirror on the wall, and his hair stood up in tufts where he'd run his fingers through it. "It's been too bloody long since I had to tie one of these, River, my girl," he said to her, though she was not standing where he could see. "My fingers have forgotten how." He straightened and tossed the length of cream-colored cloth to the floor in annoyance. "Maybe I'll just wear a scarf or something. Got quite a few of those. Or stick to my usual tie. Scruffy," he muttered, offended. "And me, a vision of sartorial splendor. Well, all right, maybe not these days, but still, it's better than a jumper and a leather jacket, isn't it?" River glided into the little room and picked up the cravat. "Sit," she ordered, pointing at the bunk. He did so, faint amusement rolling off him. "Thank you," he said, as River looped the length of fabric around his neck and began to knot it properly. "Used to do it for Simon all the time," she said softly. "Before I went away and got broken, he had to learn to do it himself. Had to learn to do everything for himself and for me." Her voice wavered, pain breaking through. The doctor caught her hand before it could clench in the folds of the cravat and ruin it. "What happened to you, River?" He tugged at her hand until she sat down beside him. "Mal told me some about Miranda, but I know there's more to it." She hunched her shoulders. "Old men, with blood on their hands," she whispered. "They wanted weapons, even if they were broken." His eyes narrowed around the thick-rimmed spectacles. "You were experimented on," he guessed. She nodded, old misery and rage clawing at her heart. "Dressed up like a doll, needles in my eyes asking what I see." She sucked in a breath and fought to make sense. "The Academy. We thought it was a school, but they... She choked on the words. "They threatened to drown her." She'd never told anyone what happened, not in words that made sense, not in detail, like she saw in her nightmares and memories. The doctor slid off the bunk to kneel in front of her, heedless of the damage the floor was doing to his trousers. His eyes held hers, deep and dark and endless. She could fall into that darkness, fall forever. But it wasn't a scary darkness, not for her. She only saw compassion there, heard only concern in his thoughts. "May I see?" he asked softly. "You asked," she said, voice catching on a sob. "No one ever asks, even when they try to make me better." He reached out to tuck a lock of hair behind her ear, smiling a little. "I do remember some of the manners my mother taught me. It's rude to poke around people's brains without permission." "I know," whispered River. "But I do. I can't help it. I can't keep them out." "May I see?" he asked again. She nodded, but she couldn't hide her terror. He tilted his head. I won't if you don't want me to, he said, his voice very gentle. Or if you'd like your brother here. I don't know, River whispered miserably. I see into other people's heads all the time, and they're in my head, but it's another thing entirely to consciously allow another being into your mind. Believe me, I quite understand. She knew he did, just as she knew that he would not harm her. But the thought of allowing him to see inside her mind, to really see how broken she was, choked her with fear. He'd see she was a monster, that they'd turned her into something horrible. The doctor stood, pulling her into a warm hug. It's all right, he said quietly. Now isn't a good time anyway. He pulled back and smiled down at her. I expect what I'll see in your poor head will only make me angry, and that isn't a good thing for me to be. Not when I have to go be charming and devious with the corporate drones. She smiled back, relieved. When you come back, I won't drown. I'll breathe, and I'll let you see. I'll have to tell you some about my more amusing experiences with telepathy, he replied, drawing a gentle finger along her cheek. You should have seen my face when I realized a very attractive woman had walked right into my memories while I was scanning hers. He patted River's back. It'll be all right. The question hung in the air, burning bright like a star. River looked at it and decided to ask, Can you help me? The doctor's face was grave. I really don't know, River. You're the doctor. You make things right. Yes, but sometimes I can't. Sometimes I fail. His voice was low. River could see clearly that it was not an admission he liked making. Then he smiled again. Thank you for tying my cravat for me, he said. His eyes slid away. Most of my life I've traveled with other people. I suppose I'm a bit lost when I'm on my own. You miss her. You miss all of them. But you miss her the most right now, because she saved you. Bad wolf. His gaze flew back to hers, eyes startled wide. In his shirt sleeves and vest, without the armor of suit coat and overcoat, he looked very young and exposed. You see a lot, don't you? Too much. What do you see when you look at me? River squinted at him, making his face blur. Seeing him, young, old, tall, short, thin, stocky, white hair, blonde hair, black hair, brown hair, curly and straight, long and short, gray eyes and blue, brown and green, and everything in between. Laughter, judgment, fury, love, arrogance, compassion, loneliness. You've been broken so many times, she said finally. So many different faces, different voices, different selves, but the same soul. Why aren't you crazy like me, changing so much? Who says I'm not? He sat down again, propping his back against the wall. After a moment, River did the same, still studying the strange young face with its ancient eyes intently. You know what I am, don't you? Asked the doctor, fiddling with a watch chain on his vest rather than looking at her. He drew out a pocket watch of some silvery metal, its surface engraved with intricate astronomical symbols and words in a flowing alien script. Seeing and knowing aren't the same. I see you, but I still don't know. I feel your hearts in my chest, hear the thunder in your head. I can smell the storm, but it's... Alien? He ran his fingers over the surface of the watch, still not meeting her eyes. River nodded. But not really. He let out a soft breath of laughter, bitter as wormwood. Oh, you haven't seen me in a crisis yet. I've been told I'm really alien, then. You look at the big picture. You miss little human things. Yes. The doctor sighed and pulled off his glasses, tucking the watch away with a hand that trembled only a little. The irony is, most of my own people felt that I was entirely too human most of the time. His eyes grew impossibly distant, seeing something long gone. That sorrow had grown old, but no less painful. River felt it like a great weight on her soul. You're Captain Nemo, she announced. He cocked an amused eye at her. Am I, then? You're no one, and everyone. You don't have a name, or a home, or a family. Not anymore. Lost. For a moment, the doctor's face looked as old as he was. Then he smiled, chasing away the vulnerability. You, River, are a truly terrifying young woman. I like that. I'll keep your secret. I appreciate that. Thank you. The doctor sighed. And now I must be off to break into headquarters. I expect it won't go smoothly. It never does. He stood, tugged at his vest to straighten it, then reached for his suit coat. Shrugging it on, he turned back to River. Well, do I look presentable? Your hair is sticking up. Yes, it does that. I've given up trying to make it behave. Aside from the hair? Shiny. But I think I liked the green velvet coat better. His eyes narrowed. Terrifying, he said, chuckling a little. Then he added, and the green velvet coat only went with the long hair and green eyes. Surely you can see that along with everything else. River smiled. Anara will twist your arm if you're late. I can well imagine. He held out a hand to her. Care to come in with me to find her? I'll stay. I want to think. Dangerous, that. But his smile said he didn't mean it. Very well. I'll see you later, strange River. Maybe. River blinked as she caught a sudden glimpse. Be very careful today, Doctor. You won't like what you see.
Oh, very posh, said the Doctor, looking around the lush, ornate lobby of Renier Enterprises LTD. Bit excessive, though. He's got a bit of everything, hasn't he? Gothic Revival, Art Nouveau, and Art Deco. Don't think those really go together. Bit of Rococo, bit of Baroque.
It certainly is, overwhelming, Anara murmured.
My eyeballs may start bleeding at any moment, but very posh, nonetheless.
Anara smiled at this, but her gaze drifted from studying the lobby back to Mal, who was making a magnificent show of not studying her. The business suit she'd unearthed from the bottom of her trunk was, by her standards and nearly everyone else's, absolutely demure. But Mal's jaw had dropped in a perfectly gratifying manner when she came out of her shuttle wearing it. He'd recovered himself quickly enough, managing not to drool too noticeably, and Anara allowed herself to feel inwardly pleased at his reaction. He didn't do it very often, at least not where she saw it. Mal himself had gotten into the spirit of things, and she'd been shocked herself when she saw what he'd come up with. She'd expected him to cling stubbornly to his usual old uniform, trousers and suspenders. Instead, he'd pulled out a formal suit she hadn't seen since that debacle on Persephone, and with his normally untidy hair combed back a la Simon, and a pair of wire-rimmed spectacles produced from God knows where, he looked as though he and the Doctor could be brothers for one. Brown suits, brown hair, spectacles. It was like having her very own matched pair of accountants. And that was the story they'd decided on. Anara would play high-powered something or other, and Mal and the Doctor would be her hapless lackeys. And Mal looked surprisingly professional in his disguise. He was such a man's man most of the time that it was strangely endearing to aim something less soldierly. "Do we even know what we're looking for?" Mal muttered. "All we got is rumors Veneer's got an alien stashed somewhere, and the guy who jumped you."
"Not as such," replied the Doctor, blithely. "But I'll know it when I see it."
Mal's nostrils flared in annoyance, but before he could reply, Anara said, "Time to go. The receptionist is staring at us oddly." She lifted her chin, arranging her expression into a cool and haunty mask as she strode towards the great curved desk. The receptionist, a thin blonde woman of uncertain age and artificially enhanced beauty, returned the look with a stare nearly as arrogant.
"May I help you?"
Anara gestured imperiously towards the Doctor. "My credentials." The Doctor handed over the leather wallet containing the psychic paper, with an uncharacteristically meek expression. On her other side, Anara heard Mal draw on a breath and not let it out.
"Merciful Buddha, please let this work."
The receptionist took the wallet and opened it. After a moment, her eyes widened.
"Oh, of course, my apologies, madam."
She smiled now, deferential.
"You're here for the audit." "I expect to have a full look at everything," said Anara. "Yes, of course. The elevator will give you access. You have your ident card?"
Anara gave her a thin smile.
"Don't be ridiculous."
The receptionist flushed.
"Right this way, madam."
Alonzo Vega's ident card, cleaned of its DNA coding and theft tracer by the Doctor in some mysterious fashion, granted them instant access to the elevator. Out of the corner of her eye, Anara saw the receptionist relax visibly when she saw the card had worked.
fear of a superior's wrath if the almighty auditor had been given a faulty card, or suspicion that the auditor was an impostor.
"Seems a bit paranoid for an entertainment company," remarked Mal, once the doors had closed.
The doctor pulled out his sonic screwdriver and squinted professionally at the control panel. "Clearly you haven't spent much time around media corporations," he replied. "Most of them make military units look open and friendly. On some planets, the phrase, 'it's a cutthroat business,' isn't meant as a metaphor."
"They seem to be expecting an auditor," said Honora.
"Good."
The doctor ran a finger over the buttons and pressed one at random.
"No one will get too fussed if we go about asking nosy questions, then."
"As long as the real auditors don't show up, we should be all right."
The doctor gave Honora a pained look. "How did you have to say that? Now they're bound to turn up."
He shook his head and turned his attention to the building map on the wall.
"I swear, everyone has to go and jinx it all, saying something like, 'It can't possibly get any worse,' or, 'Ooh, it's unsinkable.' Absolute rubbish. Now shall we begin with the employee lounge?"
"Why?"
"Gossip? Chatting up disgruntled employees, maybe?"
The doctor sighed. "Actually, I thought we could grab a coffee before we got started."
"River?"
Simon poked his head into her room. It was, unsurprisingly, empty. He sighed and started back the way he'd come. River seemed better than she had been, and she assured him she didn't need him fussing over her all the time, but he couldn't help but worry. He'd watched out for her their entire lives. He was more parent than brother to her in so many ways. And he still had twinges of guilt over his relationship with Kaylee, though he was careful not to mention that in Kaylee's hearing. And if he tried to tell River about it, she just suggested he was an idiot. Which was, he reflected ruefully, probably true. He and interpersonal relationships had never got on well. He found his sister in the cargo bay, pressed up against the side of the doctor's odd blue box, like she was trying to hug the thing. Simon studied the tableau for a moment, then gave up. Trying to figure out why his sister did anything had been futile even before the Alliance made her crazy. But he had to ask. River seemed drawn to their strange new passenger, and Simon wasn't sure he was all that thrilled about it.
"River, what are you doing?"
"Shh," she said. "I'm listening." She had her ear pressed against the blue-painted wood. Simon eyed the box dubiously. Police public call box. He'd never seen anything like it, though presumably it once had something to do with law enforcement. It was weird, though. His eyes kept wanting to slide right past it, to not notice it, even though it was very clearly there.
"Is there something inside?" he asked. No one had so much as caught a glimpse of what the doctor kept in there. Funny, no one had even speculated.
"It's alive," said River.
"What is?"
He reached out to touch the wood. It was smooth and slick under his fingers, and strangely warm. He could almost feel a slight hum, a vibration that didn't belong with ordinary blue-painted wood. He jerked his hand away, telling himself it was just his imagination.
"It sings sometimes," continued River, still leaning against the box. "And it has stories."
"River." He didn't want to tell her it couldn't possibly be alive. For all he knew, to River, it was. Her perception of the world was so strange, he knew he would never be able to understand it. That knowledge alone made him long to condemn the Alliance and all their Goram research to the deepest pits of hell. By changing her so profoundly, they'd forever separated he and River. Before, despite the fact that next to her he was an idiot child, they'd still thought alike. He'd been able to follow the leaps and bounds her brilliant mind made, albeit more slowly. He could never do that again, and he hated them for it. He sat down cross-legged on the floor before her.
"You really seem to like the doctor," he commented.
He squashed firmly all his desires to urge her to be careful, that they knew nothing about the man, that he was far too old for her, and so on and so forth. He needed to be Simon the friend, or possibly Simon the psychiatrist, not Simon the overprotective big brother. River wasn't fooled. She wrinkled her nose at him.
"He bothers you."
"Well, he bothers most of us. Except you, and possibly Kaylee. He's just so..."
"He's different," she agreed.
"But he's safe."
"Safe? Okay," he agreed.
"I'm sure you, of all of us, are the most qualified to tell."
"But, River, who is he? He's been on this ship for weeks, and we still know nothing about him." Her lips curled into a mysterious smile. "He's the trickster god," she said. "He opens minds, make them see what they are. Shows the choices, makes them choose."
Okay. Simon didn't bother trying to pretend he understood. He was never really sure when to take his sister literally, and when she was being metaphorical. He'd learned not to ask.
"Do you know," she said, her voice suddenly brisk, "I used to think I was special."
She sounded more like the old River, the girl from before the academy.
"You are he started, but she interrupted him. "No, not like that," River said impatiently. "I thought I was special because everyone else was ordinary. But Simon, there is no ordinary. Not through his eyes. No such thing as an ordinary human. Ordinary anything. What must it be like to see like that all the time? To never lose the wonder?"
"I really don't know." Simon gave it some thought. What would it be like to see the best potential, the beauty, in everything? When had he last seen things that way? Probably when he was about 5. Maybe not even then. Then River stiffened, her eyes going wide, and philosophical thoughts flew right out of Simon's head.
"What is it, River? What's wrong?"
"Bad timing," she hissed. "It started